Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. All right, so it is December. We do not have any big store news. We're just trying to keep up with the holiday sales. So
the store news is holidays.
Yep. No big news, but there is a lot of news to cover, so we're just going to dive right into that this time. First of all, gentlemen, Fantastic Four 2 is officially dead.
No!
Does that mean Marvel will get Fantastic Four back and all will be right with the world?
Probably not.
Well, but here's the thing. They have the property. They're not going to make a movie out of it. Wouldn't they at least want to make some money off of it?
Yeah.
Or is Marvel's use of it worth so much to Marvel that it's better to keep them from that, to hobble Marvel?
Do we know this contract well enough to say that if they don't produce another movie in, say, 2 years, do the rights revert back to Marvel?
It's longer than 2 years. It's like 7.
Really?
Yeah, it's a longer time
than
that.
Well, that seems like a really bad contract to sign on the dotted line.
Well, Marvel needed money.
I'm aware, but man.
Yeah, it's really only in, like, what, the last, what, 10 years? Is that what, as the first
whenever Iron Man came out, so about 10 years,
Marvel's had that kind of clout. Yeah. Back then, before that, Sony and Fox were kind of pretty important to
them. That's right. Spider-Man got to eat.
Maybe these new X-Men TV shows are a sign of goodwill that Marvel's letting them do it. And then they'll be like, yeah, can I have a Fantastic Four?
Well, you know, that's what we all believed, and I still wonder at this point, them saying Fantastic Four 2 was on the schedule, all that kind of thing, if that was just posturing. Yeah. They didn't want to admit that it had tanked.
Well, if they were looking to potentially sell the property, it could have been, you know, it's like posturing.
They didn't have to admit it. They just had to look at the data.
Yeah.
I mean, it tanked.
Yeah. But at any rate, the good news is, regardless of whether or not it comes back to Marvel, there won't be another crappy Fantastic Four movie in the theaters. Ruining the characters. So
just bring them into the Marvel Universe. There's many ways to do it.
Yep. Speaking of Marvel Universe, the Civil War trailer came out.
Holy God.
Now, this is interesting because usually we get the trailer's coming out. Here's the trailer for the trailer. Here's the teaser for the teaser for the trailer. This one has dropped.
It snuck up on everybody.
Yeah, I didn't know it was coming.
No, I think it
didn't hit on Thanksgiving, did it?
It was right before.
Okay. I was looking at Facebook, and then I saw people start to post it, and I was like,
I was sure it was fake.
Real.
I was sure it was fake, because we hadn't heard anything about it. And what a great trailer.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty good.
We've all wondered what the conflict was going to be, because they obviously weren't going to do the superhero registration and that kind of thing. But instead, it's about Winter Soldier. Yeah. Which makes perfect sense.
I think there's some registration involved.
There's some elements of it, but Winter Soldier is the fulcrum on which it turns, and that is a really good dividing point between Tony and Cap. Because Tony doesn't have any personal attachment to Bucky.
No.
And he's the one guy who Cap sees himself as having failed before, so he would be sort of go to the ends of the earth to protect him or rehabilitate him or whatever. Whatever he's doing now. Now, I don't remember, what is the actual conflict? Like, do they spell it out in there? He's clearly at the center of it.
They more or less spell it out. Basically, I think the world governments are trying to bring the Winter Soldier in for all his crimes. And Cap is protecting him.
And also the Avengers have, dropped a city in a foreign country down to causing a lot of chaos.
Yeah, basically the Avengers have they were involved with the Battle for New York and all that kind of stuff. It's that, do superheroes cause more problems than they solve kind of thing.
Which
is never a thing I'm super fond of, but I trust them to get it right.
Right. Well, it's also, sometimes it's a bit of an elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Especially for people who aren't familiar with the conceits of the superhero genre.
Yeah.
You know, like, yes, it's okay for Batman to be a vigilante. It just kind of is accepted in this world.
Yeah.
People don't, like, the cops are not hunting in the way to hunt a real vigilante.
Yeah. If people don't understand the genre, you get people seriously arguing, like, well, why didn't Bruce Wayne just spend his money on anti-crime programs and helping the needy and all this kind of thing? I'm like, it's because it's a comic book.
Right. Because him writing checks to charities
would be the most boring story.
Punching Joker.
Yeah, Batman, Legend of the Checkbook is not a book that would sell.
Nick, what were you saying?
No, I was just going to say, I am just happy to see William Hurt take the mantle of Thunderbolt Ross again. He's in there. That's who he was in Hulk.
I forgot.
But they're not, I guess I thought it was a new character.
No.
Yeah, but I thought it was sort of something of the redheaded stepchild that they don't mention it much.
You remember in the bonus scene in Hulk, Tony?
Did he ever mention Betty Ross?
Yeah, he mentioned Betty because she was... No, they haven't mentioned Betty.
Avengers movies and stuff?
They've made references to her, and also
well,
the whole
Veronica being the most obviously one.
Yeah, right. But they're definitely he's trying to stay away from her. Yeah. And then they built up the relationship with Black Widow. But no, it's definitely him. And the extra scene in Incredible Hulk was Tony talking to
But that's all Hulk. Hulk was its own. Dave's not wrong. They have more or less sort of ignored that Hulk exists because also it had Edward Norton.
Yeah.
But when he talks about how, you know, last time I was in New York, in Avengers, he's like, last time I was in New York, I broke Harlem.
Yeah.
That was in the Hulk movie. True. So they reference it sort of more obliquely than the other stuff, but it is still in continuity.
Right.
I just like William Hurt, so I'm very happy to see him back in the Marvel Universe.
And we glimpsed Black Panther.
Yeah.
And he looks cool. There's some cool fight sequences. No Spider-Man to be seen, which has led to a funny meme on Facebook.
Favorite thing to come out of the internet
the meme thing is great.
Is the fan-made cartoon that has Tony holding like a card that says "Best Friend Forever."
Oh yeah,
and Steve is hugging Bucky and Tony's crying.
There's a lot of heartbroken Tony Stark images.
Yeah, the Simpsons one. Yes, the one that does the Simpsons ref.
I don't know if you.
I don't know if I've seen that.
The original reference was there's an episode on the Simpsons where Ralph Wiggum, the awkward classmate of Lisa Simpson, while they're like, what are they on? That
they're on a date because he had tickets to the Krusty Anniversary
Show.
Why
is it filmed?
Because it's the Krusty Anniversary Show.
Oh right, so they're on Krusty the Clown Show, and he proclaims his love like in the middle of the show, and she's mortified and like spurns him.
She goes off on him.
Right. And he like breaks down and Bart is later tormenting Lisa with it. He's like, watch, you can actually freeze frame and, or, you know, still frame through it and you can see the actual moment when his heart breaks. And it's like forward, you know, crying face. And that is, they basically did that version with Tony.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I'm super excited. Civil War has been such a thing where we're all like, why is this not an Avengers movie? It sounds like everybody's going to be in it.
Yeah.
But when I watch the trailer, I'm like, oh no, this is a Captain America movie.
Right. But we know it is heavily going to involve other characters.
Yeah.
But it is, I'm trying to think, are the big guns in it? Are Thor or Hulk in it?
No, Thor and Hulk are not in it.
So
well,
it is a, no.
Are we sure Hulk's not in it?
Yes.
Okay.
You don't think that it might be like,
because they're going to be dealing with other things, I think. I think they're both in the next Thor.
Oh, right. Thor and Hulk are going to be off in Asgard.
Oh,
and
right.
Dealing with Ragnarok.
How awesome is it? This is like the movies are doing what the comics used to do. Like, they're like, oh, well, why wouldn't these guys show up? Because they're off in another comic doing something else.
Right, right. Well, you know, every time I run a superhero role-playing game, I somewhat usually have to contrive some reason why the characters that y'all are playing, it's like, oh, why don't you just ask the Justice League for help?
Yeah.
Like, the Justice League are off, you know, dealing with Darkseid right now. They're off-planet, so y'all have to...
The Justice League is pooping. They're all pooping right now.
But yeah, and it's a long-standing comic book tradition. If the universes are working right, there's this kind of fun sense of, like, the give and take of like the different worlds or the different crossovers between them where you can't just rely on the people to always be there.
Seriously, if you went back in time and told like 13-year-old Randy this is where things were going to be, I would have been so gleeful. almost as gleeful as I am now as 44-year-old Randy, because I love the Marvel Cinematic Universe and everything they do just makes it better for me.
I mean, I have super faith in the Russo brothers after Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. They Civil made what is, I think, effectively the best of the Marvel movies.
Yep.
I caught like the a scene on HBO the other day or whatever it was of the bridge scene where they're Winter Soldier's taking on all three of them, and it's like one of the best action sequences, and I'm just like
I'm trying to think, they did show some big action sequences where it just glimpsed at the trailer. Did Cap and Winter Soldier do some back-to-back fighting or something?
They're fighting Iron Man.
Oh yeah they're just like wailing on it. Yeah. Like kind of like doing it in tandem to the point where you could be like, these guys are not, like, super high level, but when they work together...
Yeah. They're swapping the shield back and forth, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. Oh, man.
There is so much stuff in there that made me just kind of giggle
with the Black Panther's costume looks badass.
It does. When's this coming out? March?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not too far out.
That's not far out. I am super excited.
I'm just pumped for Ant-Man to come out on Blu-ray the next week. And
yep.
And that will be phase two. I will have all of the movies.
All right. I don't know if you guys, I don't know if any of us here are huge Mystery Science Theater 3000 fans. Like, I've seen some.
Yeah,
I've seen
exactly some. In the place I think that y'all, sounds like y'all are. I like it. I like the show.
Yeah.
I was not the dedicated fan that some people were where I've seen all the episodes.
No, I've seen a few of them.
I've seen a few of them. It's funny. And it inspired Master Pancake Theater, which is
we love.
The local version, which I love.
Yeah.
So
they're doing a Kickstarter.
And I have much respect for
them. We mentioned their Kickstarter they were doing to do new episodes.
Yep.
With creator Joel Hodgson.
Yep.
And I believe the Kickstarter is currently at the point where they could do, I think, 6 or 9 episodes. They're trying to get up to 12, but they're definitely going to do some. What's kind of cool is some casting news has come out. And they have cast Felicia Day as the new doctor, the new mad scientist who shoots him off into space. And Patton Oswalt as TV's son of TV's Frank.
That's pretty awesome.
And what was really adorable is you go to the – there's a tweet exchange that he between him and Hodgson. And Hodgson says something like, hey, would you be interested in doing anything on camera as well? And Patton Oswalt was like, yes! and he said, well, yeah, we're thinking you could be, you know, something to do with Frank, either a clone or his son. And he's like, oh, my God! So it's pretty awesome.
That's pretty awesome.
And this has made me much more interested in it because I love Felicia Day and I love Patton Oswalt. And it's sort of geek royalty.
You know, I think the reason it didn't quite, you know, resonate me, and this is as fully as, say, like, Master Pancake Theater does, oddly enough.
Yeah.
Although there's part of that is just live is fun.
Yeah.
But it makes it more like a live comedy show. Is sometimes their references I felt like were from a slightly before my time.
Yeah.
You know, they'd be like making references to like Donna Reed show and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like, I'm vaguely aware that that was a thing.
Yeah.
And what's funny though is like, I know people younger than me who have watched more MST3K than me and like love it. And so those were super witty guys. Obviously, you didn't need to catch every single reference to get by.
Prefer the Master Pancake Pflugerville references.
Yeah, the Pflugerville. And,
the more
meanwhile on IH-35 references.
The more universal Pflugerville references. but I'm excited for that.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I you know what I was talking about? Somehow Batman and Robin, the Joel Schumacher thing came up in the store the other day, and I'm like, please let them pick some modern classics.
Oh yeah, that would be good. Speaking of unexpected returns, Zach Galligan, who I believe is the guy who played Billy, has confirmed Gremlins 3 is happening.
Billy in Gremlins, yes. I was like, he played Billy, you know, Billy.
So Gremlins 3.
Yeah.
We looked this up, didn't we? The time didn't what 1991.
For Gremlins 2?
The Gremlins 2 came out? Yeah.
That sounds about
so
right.
So it's been almost 25 years. It'll be 25 years when it comes out.
That's crazy.
And here's the thing. It's going to be a sequel. So Billy, we're thinking, is it going to be like Billy's the dad and his kids and they still have the Mogwai? Because Mogwai...
We don't know how the Mogwai's age.
Because Gizmo probably doesn't age.
Yeah, they're kind of like magical, basically.
You remember the old Chinese man had him in the first movie.
Yeah.
And that was probably his childhood pet.
And in the second one, the Chinese guy's store got destroyed because it was on the block that the guy wanted to build.
It was destroyed by evil Donald Trump stand-in and Ted Turner stand-in, actually, is more accurate.
Lex Luthor's father.
Lex Luthor's father, yes.
Oh, right, yeah. I forget his name.
I always forget his name.
John Glover,
yes. Yeah.
He's always a fun guy.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of Gremlins 2. To me, it's a little bit too much like what Dark Knight Strikes Again was to Dark Knight. if Gremlins is Dark Knight.
You're not 100% wrong, although I don't know if Gremlins is Dark Knight.
You know, when I saw Gremlins as a kid, I've told you all this story before. I think I saw it at like a midnight screening, and I was probably around... When did that movie come out?
80. We did the math. It's 84. It was 84. Yes, it was 84.
So I was 11 when it came out. Pretty much the perfect age. It had horror stuff. It had scary stuff. As I say, it had comedy stuff.
I just watched it through the internet. I actually made my wife watch it.
And it even had, like, he was an aspiring comic book writer, artist. And I love all of these things. And there were special effects.
Yeah, it's funny. I made my wife watch it the other night because she had never seen it before.
Yep.
And I forgot that Joe Dante directed it.
Yep.
So great director. And it is actually.
Joe Dante directed a ton of sort of kid, but kind of like teen kid movies in the 80s, and was like his fingerprints. Like he was like a slightly more twisted Spielberg.
Yeah,
he did a lot of suburbia stuff.
Yeah,
but I'd forgotten that the it is pretty horror laden.
Oh yeah, the first one especially.
Like a super kid friendly movie.
No, but it is funny.
It's also meant to be able to be approached by kids, at least parents who allow their kids to see some somewhat macabre things.
Yeah. I'm just saying, Billy's mom in that movie.
Yeah,
she's a total badass. She's like killing Grimm.
That's right.
She microwaves.
She microwaves.
It's not Adrienne Barbeau, is it?
No.
Okay. She microwaves.
Yeah.
And she stabs straight up.
I gotta say, you know how like in Pacific Rim, they were like,
I love it. I can't wait to see where this is going.
You know, you had the giant robots versus or giant mechs versus giant monsters.
Yeah.
And they gave you what you wanted.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
Gremlins did, kind of hits yeah. everything. It, yeah. it goes, it's like, oh, these, you know, they're super cute. At first, you're just like, oh my God, Mogwai is adorable. And then you get to, like, the scary ones.
Yep.
And then you get to see them die in horrible ways.
Yep, yep.
Just throughout. They do, and they do also do terrible things to people. They terrorize people. They shoot the old person on the motorized steps.
Yeah. The
window.
Yep.
You're not wrong, though. It does kind of ping-pong its way from horror to slapstick to every sort of genre can be.
And I would say the second one kind of ran more with the slapstick.
But
added some more, almost like a satirical kind of thing.
Yeah.
In there too.
It was Die Hard, Gremlin style.
Well, what was Billy's job in the second one?
He was art director or artist in their art department.
Yeah. Okay, he kind of sold out a little bit fulfilled his comic book dreams.
Yes,
I'm
yes.
just saying a third one could work. No, basically, Billy's the father that his kids.
I actually think if it's like a holiday thing again, it's like the kids do something wrong and Gizmo and they get gremlins. And
I was trying to remember, the second one takes place during what holiday? Because it's not Christmas because of his girlfriend.
Oh,
his
Easter, right? Doesn't she tell a story about her Easter?
No, she tells a story about Lincoln's birthday.
That's great. Because in the first one, it tells the horrible Christmas story
of all time, dropped in the middle of what had been kind of, well, lightish-ish until then, about her father's death on Christmas.
And then she tells a story in the second one that is basically making fun of how macabre that story was.
Right, and that is, I think, maybe for me, the pinnacle of the second one. Is
She's like, he was dressed just like President Lincoln, except for the raincoat. And then, and then Billy's like, yeah, we gotta go.
Yeah.
He's like, stop telling stories like this.
Were they shown to be a couple or married or anything?
The first one, they were basically getting together.
Yeah. The second one, they were a couple.
They were a couple, they were living together. And there was some fear of commitment stuff because there was a
Cage, right?
Yes,
it is.
There was a man hungry woman after Billy in the art department.
Oh right, great.
And now, so that was a sense of source of stress.
He's saying the world is ready for Gremlins.
Is Phoebe Cates going to be in it?
I don't know. That'd be good. I don't know what Phoebe Cates does. She may have retired.
I think she sort of did, but she should come back for Gremlins 3.
Yes, I'm sure that'll happen.
And tell a story of Valentine's.
Gremlins is a movie that, although I did love it as a kid, it has dropped a little in my esteem. It's like I can't recreate that myself at that age.
Yeah.
And it's a little schlocky and stuff. But I still have a fondness for it, and I could be down for Gremlins 3.
Yep, me too.
Gizmo's love of Rambo in the second one.
You know, even in the first one, they did all sorts of pop culture jokes.
Oh,
at the
God,
time,
yes.
too.
Steve McQueen to, or no, it wasn't Steve McQueen. Who was the driver? It was.
Well, you're talking about when he's driving the little Barbie car.
Yeah,
I think that was just goofiness.
No, it was a reference to like a movie he had seen earlier in the
I can't remember. But yeah, honestly, I'd go ahead and. These movies don't necessarily need to worry too much. They're sort of like old Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yeah.
They should go ahead and be satirical and stuff and spoof whatever is around.
Yep.
Yep.
I agree.
In other words, you go ahead and have Trump in this and get him killed by the gremlins. Horribly devoured.
We could do that in real life. Anybody got any gremlins?
Sure they exist.
Expose them to water and right away, feed them after midnight right away.
All right.
Really fast.
Good news, Supergirl. There's been some ratings worries, but Supergirl's been ordered to a full season.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's good. We're all liking it.
The first thing I saw on it was that it was like doing that. It had like huge ratings.
Yeah, but then that was the thing. It had huge ratings and then a big drop, and that big drop still took it to like really healthy ratings for anyone but CBS.
Right. I do know some people who like just don't plug into it. Like it's too cheesy for them or whatever.
I understand that. I've been watching it and I don't love it as much as I love The Flash. But I like it a lot. My daughter loves it. It's like the one thing we watch every week.
Am I correct that you and I are kind of like, it's for me, it's pretty close to Flash, actually.
Yes.
I think maybe the dramatic chops aren't quite there because it doesn't have quite the anchor of the dude who plays like Joe.
Yeah, it doesn't have
like
Jesse
that.
Martin.
No,
or also
Jesse
the guy
Martin.
Who plays Wells.
Yeah.
But that said, I do like, I honestly like what's his name, although it's a little bit slightly more one note role, but who's the guy who plays...
The Jimmy Olsen guy.
No, I was going to actually say Hank...
oh yeah,
Hank Henshaw,
David Harewood.
Yeah, I like him for a little bit of grounding to it, and they are starting to round out their characters a bit.
I'm actually really liking Calista Flockhart.
I've warmed to her a little bit. I was hoping they would do what they are kind of doing.
Yeah, she's playing big, but they're giving her more.
Last night's episode, and I'm not spoiling anything. They develop her character even more.
Okay.
So they're going in the right direction with everyone.
And they've done, you know, some nice little nods. They brought in Livewire.
Yeah, Livewire was a good one.
So, yeah, we're all liking it. And it is going to get a full season.
Cool.
Star Wars Rebels is getting a third season.
Yay!
Yep, that's super cool, because season two has been really good so far.
I'm a couple episodes behind.
I'm also a couple episodes behind. I can't remember the last... Oh, the last one I saw was with the Inquisitors showing up. First time.
Is that the one with the B-Wing?
No, that was before that. Before that was Inquisitors. The B-Wing was the last one I saw.
Yeah, the B-Wing was cool.
And that was a great episode. They introduced the B-Wing as sort of prototype ship. Mm-hmm. They really let Hera, their pilot, show off her skills. And they show why the B-Wing was such a badass ship, which was really cool.
I was trying to think, like, we only see it in Return of the Jedi, as far as the movies go. Yeah. And there's not a lot of them. There's maybe a few of those flying around. So it seems like it's kind of a rarer ship.
Yeah.
When I played them in various video games and stuff before, it seems like it's, like, kind of hard to control, but super armed.
Yeah.
And, like... It's like it seems like it'd be one that would take a person who is like you got to be an expert to fly.
That's kind of what it is, actually. Yeah. I think, and so it's,
they ran with that,
and it's a heavy fighter. Like it does heavy weaponry, heavy armor, that kind of thing. So
that's cool,
pretty cool. So there is also development of a new TV show. Fox has signed a deal to develop Rambo, a new father-son TV show.
I saw this, and I just had to mention it because it was awesome.
So there's conflicting information about whether Stallone has a deal in place to act. Some sources say he will, some say he won't.
I want him to.
It is written by Jeb Stuart, who is not the guy from The Haunted Tank.
The Haunted Tank, yeah.
Or maybe he is, I don't know.
J.E.B. Stewart.
Who wrote Die Hard and The Fugitive.
Hey.
So,
some pretty serious stuff.
And the show would be about the relationship between Rambo and his son J.R., who's an ex-Navy SEAL. I'm on board.
Do they mean between the two of them teaming up to go defeat terrorists? Or
I assume
whatever?
So, yes.
I mean, it's Rambo. What else are they going to do?
Now, here's the thing. The very first one, the novel, you know, was based on a serious novel, First Blood, that was about essentially a Vietnam veteran who, like, could not get a break back in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And specifically got antagonized by a sheriff who,
small town.
The mother of all mistakes, Rambo, like, destroys their whole town.
Yeah.
But it's like a more serious drama.
It is. And then after that, it kind of goes off the rails.
It gets a little cartoonish.
Well, it got into the Reagan era, and that's when we were blowing stuff up in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Not like now.
We never accidentally facilitate the creation of a terrorist.
I'm just saying, by creating it makes sense vacuums. For Fox, home of 24 and a bunch of other shows.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like perfect for a perfect fit.
Here's the thing. If they could manage to sneak in some nuance in there about sort of, you know, military life and things like that, which Rambo, you know, the First Blood very much was.
Yeah.
Without becoming like overly jingoistic about the characters, I think it could actually be okay.
If they've got a good writer, if they can get a good showrunner or a director, I mean, I could see it working.
Interesting. Here's the thing: I've actually never seen the Rambo movies.
Any of them?
I've never seen all of them through.
I have to say, well, you know, like James Cameron was like co-producer or something of Rambo at the time. It actually has some kind of cool action sequences. Like, I watched way too many, like, war movies, whether it was, like, the, I would say, pretty good Rambo, First Blood and Rambo. And I did watch too many of that wasn't missing in action. Chuck Norris movies.
Yeah.
Delta Force.
Oh, man. Those were mostly crap movies.
Yeah.
But I still watched them as a kid because I liked war movies.
Yep.
Get the terrorists. I like go back and get all the Vietnam vets.
Yep.
Nothing can live up to Commando.
Commando was maybe the right tone for that kind of level of action, which is to say, kind of camp it up a bit. I would say, Randy, at some point you might catch it.
I should at some point, at least First Blood.
Yeah, First Blood is definitely worth it.
Brian Dennehy.
Tonight, as my Facebook informed me about a year ago, was the first Flash Arrow crossover.
Yep.
Tonight is the second. Not really the second because he's crossed over. They've been in each other's universes. But
the first spotlighted.
But the big spotlight crossover this year. So that's cool.
Yep.
And we say tonight, if you're listening to this it's what you T-voted yesterday. If you're listening to it as we record it, like standing outside the office door.
That'd be crazy.
Otherwise, it was yesterday. Anyway, but, Flash Arrow crosses over, and that's cool.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
Is this one where they're doing setting up some of the
It's called Legends of
Tomorrow.
The episode is titled Legends of Today.
I'm sure that they are doing some setup.
It is set up.
Because they've notably been featuring more of, what's her name? Kendra Saunders.
Yeah. They may be doing the Hawkman, Hawkgirl stuff.
Yeah.
Wouldn't shock me.
I enjoyed her stuff with Cisco in recent episodes of Flash.
There was rumors that King Shark was going to be the bad guy.
Uh-huh.
These rumors have been, I believe, disproved, which is too bad.
Yeah, I expect King Shark to come back.
I do too.
He showed up for like 2 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, he looked badass.
He looked great.
Everybody responded well because it was like such a awesomely ridiculous character.
So, Dave, you're caught up?
I'm caught up.
So, did you like the last episode?
The Grodd one?
Yeah.
I think the Grodd episode was the best one they've done this season. I thought it was so good.
It was really good.
I liked it, but it was not like, I think, maybe quite my upper echelon ones. Although, okay. I don't know quite what would be.
For this season, I feel like it was the pinnacle.
I felt like that capper to the episode.
The capper
is like,
was almost like, if I was doing, rating on like a 5-star scale, it'd probably get an extra star for the last 20 seconds.
I knew that's where they were going, too.
I mean, I hoped. I really hoped.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, honestly, I liked the one before that, too. Some of the slightly silly stuff with, I was at Linda Park having to disguise herself as alternate world evil Linda Park.
I like that.
Essentially started out being a very goofy episode with all of that.
Yeah.
And then Zoom showed up and it became this terrifying.
Yeah, they made
horrible.
Zoom scary.
Yeah, Zoom, the beatdown he gives Flash was like the mother of all beatdowns.
Yeah.
And sort of showing him to the people that he loves that.
He was like racing around in front of crowds, showing off the unconscious Flash, like, here's your hero.
Yeah, I have a theory about who Zoom is. I won't say it on podcast, but I don't want to spoil for anybody. Speculation sometimes spoils things, but have I told both of you guys my theory?
Yes, I agree with you.
So, but I forget the specifics, right. So we'll have to.
Well, we'll mention it off mic. If anyone wants to hear it, you can ask me in person. I just don't want to put it on the podcast. I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But I have a theory that'd be interesting. Finally,
we know it's Solomon Grundy.
Solomon Grundy.
It's
Superman, actually. That's why he can't be in Supergirl. one last bit, and that is that Panel Syndicate, the guys who did The Private Eye, which is the Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin series, which is out in hardcover today. We'll be talking about that in the comics.
Very true.
To help promote the hardcover, they launched their new series today called Barrier, number one. It is a 52-page issue. You can go pay as you want. I'm sure eventually it will get collected, too. I now believe they will collect their stuff.
I think this is a one-time
thing. No, they're going to see all the money from it. They're going to see people reading it who weren't otherwise reading it. They will do collections.
Also,
I would have believed it if they had held the line on this one, but now I don't believe them.
Well, there was a pact between two people.
Doesn't matter. There'll be another pact.
The point is he broke.
He broke. And therefore, I believe it will always get printing. And that's good. I think that's a good thing. Anyway.
You can get it on the ground floor right now.
If you want to get on the ground floor, go and go to panelsyndicate.com. Check out Barrier number one. I have not even read it yet. I did download it. I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
You could read it before Randy and then show off your knowledge.
Yeah, if you're outside the office right now listening, you could read it before I do.
Slide a note under that spoils it for him.
It doesn't matter. It's Marcos Martin. I'm going to read it no matter what. His art is gorgeous.
All right. That about wraps up our news. We'll be back in just a second to talk about our previews overview for next month. Okay, so we've been doing this feature for a few months now, where we go through the previews, which is the catalog from which we order everything from our comic distributor. We basically order about 2 months ahead.
The massive catalog that you two can purchase.
Yep, and go through and see what's coming up. And pre-order, that helps us make sure we get everything everybody wants. Our pre-orders for this one goes in about 3 weeks. So if there's anything you desperately want, let us know before then.
Yep.
We always will have stuff for the shelf, of course, but if there's something you want to make sure you get, pre-ordering is the way to make sure.
Yep. And there are things in previews that we don't always order.
Yep.
Some of the high-dollar items, stuff that just doesn't traditionally sell well at our store, doesn't quite seem like a good fit for us.
Well, this catalog is about 520 pages, so we can't possibly order everything.
It's just endless amounts of merchandise. Yep. But, even before I started doing the actual ordering at the store, when I was just, essentially a registered jockey.
Yep.
I used to love going through
previews. Oh, I love previews, yeah.
Just because it was like, it's the Sears catalog for comics.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
What, yeah.
You know what else?
Huh?
We go through 500 pages of comics. We do look through a 500-page book every month to order comics.
Yes.
It is a little mind-numbing.
It's crazy.
The ordering is occasionally a little bit of a drag.
It's funny.
It has inspired many of, Facebook posts.
Yeah, I do remember that when I was sick and you guys were doing it late at night without me, watching the Facebook posts of you guys slowly descending into madness.
Yes.
Yeah, it can do that.
All right, Dave.
So we're going to do our highlight reel.
We're going to do our highlight reel, stuff that we think looks cool. Dave, why don't you kick us off here?
All right. Here's one that I didn't even know what it was when I first looked at it. Randy, do you know about this Dark Knight Returns, The Last Crusade?
I don't know what that is.
So even as we are right in the middle of Dark Knight 3, or not in the middle, it has just started. It sold out for us last week. Yep. We're getting more in on Wednesday. Yep. But
by the time you hear this, unless you're sitting outside our office door listening,
we'll have it.
What if they're standing right behind us and we don't know?
Well, then we still don't have it.
We had a surprisingly positive reaction to it, or at least that was solid.
We didn't hate it.
Interesting. I can see where this is going. This seems to be a one-shot from those creators. 64-page prestige format one-shot for $8. Written by Frank Miller and Brian Azzarello, so same writing team. Drawn by John Romita Jr. and Bill Sienkiewicz, who I don't know if they've actually... Well, Frank and John Romita Jr. worked on Daredevil
Man Without Fear.
The miniseries, retelling of the Daredevil's
origin. And Sienkiewicz, of course, worked with him on Electro Assassin.
Yep. Basically, everybody who's worked with Miller.
And the description is extremely brief. It says... Though before the Dark Knight returned, ... So I'm presuming before the original Dark Knight Returns, as far as this goes, says the Joker, Poison Ivy, Selina Kyle, and the Last Robin.
Interesting.
So, I think that the original Dark Knight Returns was the first time that we saw the Robin costume in the cave that was the costume on display as if he had died.
This is going to reveal how he died.
I think so. Because
the Joker killed him.
Am I correct? That actually occurred before they killed off Jason Todd.
It did. It did.
And I don't know if it inspired it, but it got the idea. People were thinking, oh, wow, this is one of the heavy things in it. The first time you're reading, you're like, one of the Robins died?
Yeah.
What an unbelievable possibility that is.
Now, and now like three of them have died.
It happens once a month. The Robin death event.
Oh, that's a street gang. Many of
them. So, I have two things that make me a little worried about this.
Sure.
One is going back and sort of tinkering with the origins of Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like a dangerous thing. The other is, and this is my format whoredom speaking, if you're getting the collector's edition, there are going to be 8 volumes of Dark Knight. If it's in this nice slipcase they're giving you, where do you put this damn thing?
You tape it to the backside of your box.
Just saying, as a format whore, that drives me crazy.
Actually, what I could see them doing is a series of one-shots like this, and then they'll do collect it as a slipcase or whatever. Anyway, because I'm not like 100% sold on even Dark Knight 3, I don't know that this will full-on be interesting, but the cover art, which is John Romita Jr. drawing of the Joker in a straitjacket, cackling, as there's all sorts of shadows and stuff moving around him. Looks like Batman and Robin coming at him. I'm interested.
I am too, more than I thought.
Even honestly, if it's a train wreck, I'm still going to be curious to just see what he thinks would be interesting to fill in the gaps on in his mythology.
Yeah.
So what else y'all got? That's my first pick.
Okay, I'm going to take something that graces the cover of previews, and I am almost positive it's on both of your lists. It is Grant Morrison's Wonder Woman Earth 1.
I took it off my list. I was saving it for you.
Oh.
You're the Grant Morrison fan, so go to.
Well, I mean, this is Grant Morrison doing Wonder Woman sort of pre... I mean, coming to...
she's out of continuity.
This is
in the Superman Batman Earth 1 continuity. And that's not one continuity, right? Those are both separate Earths.
I think so.
Because I don't think they exist. I think Earth 1 is sort of there. It's not actually an Earth in the multiverse.
Correct.
It is just like Earth 1 is the publishing imprint, weirdly.
Right. And this is basically Grant Morrison reimagining Wonder Woman for a new era.
Yeah.
He basically says, encompassing the vision of her original creator, William Moulton Marston.
So there'll be bondage.
Yes, there will. Morrison presents a Diana who yearns to break free from her mother and the utopian society on Paradise Island. And to learn about the forbidden outside world. It involves Steve Trevor, but I think just seeing Morrison take those ideas, and he's actually talked about William Moulton Marston a lot in, like, Super Gods and other places.
Aside from his sort of the somewhat comedic, yes, he was kind of into bondage and stuff like that.
It was very interesting.
He was also, like, kind of had, like, what would for sure be the times, sort of, he was kind of like a proto-feminist.
Yep.
He had... In fact, he actually, I think, believed in female superiority as his thing. And sort of were like, if the women took over, we could, you know, like, the wars would all end and stuff like that. And Morrison, Nick, you really need to listen to the Kevin Smith interviews with
him. I'm going to.
He talked about this, and it was very interesting, all the stuff he said. Because he also included stuff about, like, he's going to try and paint a, you know, broad picture. And there was also, this is the one where he talked about how his, like, sister and his mom got in a fight at one point that was so bad at, like, a screaming match in the kitchen that there were knives pulled on each other and stuff. And he's like, I'm not going to be ignoring that either. So, despite the feminist viewpoint, it is going to be a broad perspective.
Yeah, also, I think he's trying to portray, like, a non-violent image of Wonder Woman.
She's played up her pacifism, which is a difficult thing to do in an adventure genre.
It is, but, you know, if somebody can do it, Morrison can definitely take a stab at it, you know?
I agree.
And it's going to have
one... Is it interesting that you use a violent metaphor like
this? Yes, I know. I did it on purpose. And also it's going to have beautiful art by Yannick Paquette.
Yeah, they say Yannick Paquette on art is great.
The last thing I think I saw him do was work on, what, Swamp Thing? And then he did... Some Animal Man, maybe?
Yeah, I think that's right.
But he's a great artist. This one has been talked about for forever.
They've been working on this for a while.
It is the Earth One series I'm most interested in.
Yeah. I mean, I liked the JMS stuff, and I know...
It had some interesting moments.
And I know Tila liked the...
Oh, she liked the Teen Titans one, yeah.
And I did...
Nobody likes the Batman one.
That's very true.
But Dave, aren't you reading it?
What's that?
Aren't you reading? Oh, no, you're reading the Superman
one.
Yeah, I mean, it's JMS. I mean, whether JMS hits with everything, he's...
Right. He's, even as far back as Babylon 5, he was kind of something of a hit-and-miss writer. He had always interesting aspirations. He kind of reached for the stars and stumbled more than maybe I'd like sometimes. But, you know, sometimes he does... He's always doing interesting sort of stuff.
So, yes, Wonder Woman Earth 1 is on mine. Randy?
All right, so this is... My pick is the thing that we're almost certainly not ordering for the shelf. Because it's $125, but I'm getting it, and at least no one or other two of our customers are getting it. And if you want it, definitely pre-order it, and you might want it because what they're finally doing is the Shang-Chi Master of Kung Fu Omnibus.
I'm even tempted by this because you've talked about this.
Now, this basically Shang-Chi is it was during the 70s when Kung Fu, you know, Bruce Lee was doing everything, and they did the Bruce Lee movie where he goes undercover. He works for MI6 or works for the British intelligence and goes to this, you know, island, and Chuck Norris is the bad guy and all this kind of crazy sort of mixture of James Bond and Kung Fu that they did.
Yep.
That is pretty much what Master of Kung Fu is. It is a
expanded version of
a guy who was his father is this Oriental kingpin stereotype. Fu Manchu.
Right.
Shang-Chi is his son who breaks free from his evil ways and goes to work for MI5 to oppose him and his crazy minions and you know, work with the British guys who don't entirely trust or like him.
You know, one thing I was never sure on was, like, how much of the Marvel Universe intersected with the book. Do you know, Randy?
Well, Amazing Spider-Man's in it.
Okay.
Because he was in pretty much every...
Spider-Man even made its way into Tomb of Dracula back in the day.
Transformers.
But this Tomb of Dracula is probably a good comparison. It was in the Marvel Universe, but sort of off to the side.
The one, I can remember the handful of issues where he did. Like, one had Spider-Man in it. One had Silver Surfer, of all things.
Yeah.
But he was, like, weirdly kind of deep-powered at the time. And, like, that might have been it.
Yeah.
That might have been, like, a 70-issue run.
Kung Fu, Master Kung Fu is like that. He's got some villains who wind up showing up in Wolverine later. But
I'm betting more on the level of secret criminal organization.
Yeah.
More like...
It's more like spies. It's more like espionage.
Yeah, the James Bond
guys. Who was writing
this?
But, okay, so Doug Mensch is the main writer. Yeah, there's also Steve Englehart, Len Wein are some of the other writers in this collection. But the biggest thing is Doug Mensch writes, Paul Galassi does the art. And Paul Galassi does amazing action sequences.
Yeah, he does.
This is some of the best fight sequences you'll find in any comics ever. I've read a lot of this digitally because that was the only way to get it. So I'm super excited to get a nice big hardcover of it.
This is a pretty big deal for this to be coming out.
Yeah.
It was sort of kind of like rights.
They didn't have the rights to Fu Manchu. He wasn't as public domain as they thought he was.
Yeah.
So they must have worked that out somehow. Dave, what's next on your list?
All right, I'm going to do something goofy on here. We got to talk about Street Fighter G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
It's on my list.
It's on my list, too.
So, a weird mashup of concepts that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
Shadaloo and Cobra.
Yeah, they're basically, what's his name, M. Bison, is basically a variant of the Cobra Commander evil dictator type. He's just a little more hands-on.
And you can't tell me Guile didn't train with G.I. Joe?
Yeah, if Guile and Duke don't do the opening of Predator handshake, you son of a bitch.
I want to reveal that Guile and Duke know each other. Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah.
This isn't the first time they've crossed over, because they actually had, like, G.I. Joe scale, like, actual, like, the same G.I. Joe action figures.
There were three and a quarter inch figures back in, like, the mid-90s. But I don't know if that was, like, a crossover so much as those guys were just making some toys, right?
Yeah.
Have they done a comic?
I don't think they've ever done a comic before.
By the way, there's a variant cover that I love that's, like, a done in sort of the 16-bit style and has Guile fighting Gung-Ho. Anyway, you know, there's another one that shows Ryu doing his, what's the big, Shoryuken?
On
Destro. I mean, there's endless numbers of things, you know. It's like, you know, Snake Eyes has to take on, well, let's say, I'm trying to think who would be.
Vega?
It would be like Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes versus Ken and Ryu.
Something like that. I mean, there's endless numbers of good, fun matches. Oh, and I see, like, Chun-Li and Scarlet facing off on the cover.
It should be Cammy, because she was a spy.
That's true, but Chun-Li is more iconic.
But Cammy should face off with the cover girl.
Oh, that's a better...
No, Cammy should turn on Baroness and fight her.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be a fight, too.
Actually, you know, cover girl would be a good one, though. Yeah. She was an intelligence thing, too, right?
Yep, she was.
Anyway, many ways this could go wrong, or at least essentially you end up mediocre.
Yeah.
Are there any creators involved?
Aubrey Sitterson, I do not know, and Emilio Liso on art, don't know.
Nope.
And all the preview art is just covers, so who knows?
We don't know, but we're potentially excited.
Like, you know, it should be cool.
Yeah, it should be.
All right, so that's my next one. What else? What do you
Nick?
Okay, I'm actually going to go outside and mention something that is not a comic book.
What?
Because I think the inclusion of this is pretty... that they're doing this in the first place is great. And it is the new DC Comics Icons action figure series.
On my list as well.
Was it?
Okay, I love Static.
This is Static Shock, and it looks awesome.
I am... You know about my action figure blockade.
Action figure blockade is like 10 years
gone. I was trying so hard not to buy action figures. I don't have room for action figures. I don't have, like Nick, I don't have an office in the store where I can store 400 action figures. Nick's action figures are in that space.
That's true.
So I was not buying any action figures. And then the stupid Batman ones came out, and I had to buy all those.
Yeah.
And once that barrier had broken...
It's done.
Yeah, and I love Static.
And this is a great looking figure. Heads. It comes with his jacket.
He's got one of the heads has the Malcolm X cap that he wore in his first appearance. He's got the garbage can lids Liberty flies on. It's superposable.
Yep.
It looks super cool.
The Icons line, there's a few things that I am a little annoyed with, like the articulation points, but they've done more right than they've done wrong,
yeah.
And I think they're going to learn from it as the line goes on.
Yeah.
And they're built very well, and the accessories they come with are fantastic. I mean, there's the Flash coming up that comes with the Cosmic Treadmill is going to be amazing.
Well, while we're mentioning action figures, I'm going to cheater pick over on yours.
Yeah, of course.
The next page has the DC Comics Designer Series. Speaking of breaking down my barriers, it's got Darwin Cook carrot figures. They've already done these for New Frontier.
Yep.
But this one is Batman, Harley Quinn, Supergirl, complete with Crypto and Streaky, and Adam Strange. And they're
Supergirl
all cool
is the
looking.
Tempting one because of the Streaky and Crypto.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really like that classic Batman.
Yeah, me too.
The Adam Strange is the new design. It's from the
he did those covers, right?
The Canada version.
Yeah.
From the new.
Yeah, he was doing those covers.
And it's the new 52 of Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
And I mean, his take on those characters
is really
fantastic.
So. Yep. Stupid DC. Stupid action figure people making action figures I want to buy.
What else you got, Remy?
All right. So I want to mention a Hellboy in Mexico trade.
Right.
Which is, there's a lot of Hellboy to read. Like, the current stuff is Hellboy in Hell, there's the BPRD, there's all kinds of sort of little side things. But this collection is a bunch of one-shots and short stories. Because in 1956, Hellboy caravans across Mexico. Vampire hunting with luchadors, fighting the Aztec gods, fighting evil turkeys and Frankenstein's monster, and drinking way too much tequila. That's just fun.
Yeah.
This has Mignola doing writing, some of the art, other art by Richard Corbin, other art by Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba, all the colorings by Dave Stewart. This is just Hellboy at his funnest. And so I will probably be Waiting until it comes out in hardcover, because that's how I buy all my Hellboy. Yeah. But otherwise, if you don't wait for the giant hardcover editions, this is the Hellboy trade to pick up.
I agree.
This is the one where he fights up with the like supernatural fighting luchadors.
Yep.
And
yep.
Among other things.
Yeah, that was the first one called. That was the one shot called Hellboy in Mexico that it's all based off of. But yeah, Hellboy running around in Mexico in the '50s is a blast. Dave, what's next on your list?
I'm going to cheat some stuff in, like all I right. like to do.
Sure.
I'm going to do a double manga pick.
Okay.
One is from Osamu Tezuka, the legendary, like, founder of manga.
The god of manga.
That guy, like, produced so much stuff, he might have actually eclipsed Kirby.
Yeah.
Like, even, like, if you just look at, like, his Phoenix or Buddha projects that he did, multi-volumes, each, like, a couple hundred pages long. There's one that I've never heard of, and maybe it means it's like a slightly lesser-known one. It looks like it's action-adventure, maybe a little bit more on the Astro Boy side than the more serious Phoenix, Buddha, or Adolf projects that he did.
Right.
This one is called Triton. This may actually be a fake solicit, because I could not find the page for it in here, but it is his spin on The Legend of Atlantis. And all I know is that the small piece of art on the page looks awesome. They do have codes, I guess, for two volumes of it, and it looks like sort of a traditional, like, sort of Greek city, you know, ringing a sort of mountaintop. He was like the first manga artist to do that thing where he had like the cartoony characters, but these almost like photorealistic backgrounds and stuff like that. And there's a little bit of something to that, but he also brings style to it. I don't know. It sounds cool. And then there is another manga I wanted to mention. It's American manga.
This was on my list.
Brody's Ghost Collection.
Yeah.
Brody's Ghost is actually something where I've got the individual volumes that made it up. There's like five, I think, maybe six. But I have never read them all back to back. I know I was really enjoying it, but because they sometimes took a little while to get out, I never finished it.
Yeah.
But Mark Crilly is the writer-artist, and he's a guy I've liked every project he's done.
Me too. I wish they'd reprint his Akiko stuff.
Yep, Akiko was his all-ages sort of sci-fi Oz-type stories, little girls' adventures in space.
What was the one after that?
And then he did one that was called, what was his, it was his spin on
the Four
Shoujo
Seasons
manga.
Yeah, it was a Four Seasons one.
And it was actually a really beautiful story, you know, with had that all the sort of the mystery and romance of, you know, Japanese
really
romantic stories. Yeah.
Mickey Falls,
yeah. Is there a collected edition of that?
No, it's
I think it's gone the wayside,
just out of print.
No, I think it's around somewhere.
But Brody's Ghost was his spin on, what do you call it, like, is it shonen?
Yeah, yeah.
Shonen manga, which is like the boys' adventure genre, and involved a guy who was kind of like the traditional sort of loser slacker guy.
Yeah,
But it was like in a near future thing, or maybe a little bit more.
Somewhat near future, yeah.
And a ghost that shows up with a murder mystery who's going to train him in martial arts, like ghost fighting, you know, stuff. So it was supernatural action adventure.
Yeah.
As always, there is a little bit of, like, although it is manga style, he's very much emulating the traditions of it. There's a little bit of his own sensibilities, too.
Yeah.
And so in that same way that Avatar was anime, but also had some Western sensibilities amongst the Eastern sensibilities, and I think that kind of made it a stronger product.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what Mark Crilly does with Brody's Ghost, too, is he finds a spin that makes it really unique and cool. So I'm looking forward to seeing this big old volume. It's going to have the whole thing. It's 600 pages.
Yeah.
This description from Wired is, sounds about right. Mix a pinch of The Sixth Sense with a dash of The Karate Kid and a bit of The Crow, and you'll start to get a feel for Brody's Ghost. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Anyway, those are my two manga-oriented picks from me.
Nick?
Well, Randy mentioned Shang-Chi. I'm going to mention the other, another martial artist, and kind of a badass that maybe if you've watched a little bit of Jessica Jones, you may have seen. This is The Power Man and Iron Fist #1.
Finally!
I know. This looks fantastic. It's written by David Walker, which...
He did Shaft.
Shaft. That's...
He's also doing Cyborg, but Shaft is the book that
and
I really love
him on. And art by Sanford Green, which I'm blanking on exactly what he's done.
I don't remember either, but he's a good artist.
He's got a very distinctive style to his art. But the solicit is great here. It basically says... Luke Cage and Danny Rand back together and back to street stomping basics. Power Man and Iron Fist are tracking a mystery with all the ingredients of a classic heroes for hire tale. Expect old friends, hired goons, crime lords, weird magic, plenty of power, a flurry of fists, and as much bromance as you can handle. I mean,
that is everything I want.
Yeah, as everything
I have been waiting for. That I love Power and Iron Fist in the '80s, yeah, and I'm glad to have him back.
Yeah,
everybody who likes those characters loves them as a team, and that is the one thing that Marvel has really like
weirdly never they haven't done. Yeah,
since like the '90s.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, these guys are best friends, and they haven't been in a book together in quite some time.
Does Marvel have a better bromance than those two?
No, I don't think they do.
No? I don't think so.
I mean, you could argue for Human Torch Spidey, depending on who's writing them, but right. No, Power Man and Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, this was so good that, like, it had a long-running comic that was just the two of them taking jobs, beating up dudes,
yep.
trying to pay the rent,
yep.
The usual, some of course, romance in there and stuff. Yep.
And, I mean, it's obviously going to have, you know, Jessica Jones. Luke's going to have his kid.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
In that. Yep. Danny, who knows what
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He's had relationships.
It's a little harder to imagine the somewhat, the, you know, it was always made out to be sort of, it's a sort of like freelancer work, essentially.
Yeah.
In the sense that, you know, they never knew when their next paycheck was coming. More like PI kind of work kind of stuff.
Yep.
And now that he's got a kid, you would think, guy needs a more stable income, you know. How can he still be doing this? So, hopefully they will get across that barrier, because I want the old days back.
Yeah, me too. I can totally see a version of this where he has a kid and a wife.
Just kill him off.
No, I think he'll be interesting to see how that interacts.
They've taken the grimdark mostly out of Marvel, and I'm glad for it.
Well, my favorite TV show of all time is Terriers, which is a private eye show. And in that show, one of the guys has a long-term girlfriend. They don't have a kid, but they have a dog. Yeah. And there's sort of a bit of a like the three of them have a relationship. Like she's really good friends with his best buddy and that kind of thing. I can see that with Jessica Jones, where Jessica and Iron Fist are sort of good friends because Luke is sort of someone important to both of them.
Yeah,
and if they do that right, could be great. By the way, cheater picking in while we're mentioning it.
Yep.
This David Walker also has a new Shaft series coming out this month.
Oh, fantastic.
Shaft Imitation of Life number one.
Are
so
you ready for David Walker's Shaft?
I'm ready for more Shaft. all right. So I wanted to mention we've all been enjoying the Archie series. The Archie trade paperback is coming out in February.
Yeah.
That'll collect the first six issues of the series. I've been really liking it. I'm looking forward to the trade. Not much more to say. We've talked about it numerous times.
As long as you're talking about trades, I'm going to cheater pick two trades on your pick.
That is total cheater picking. That's the end of a genre.
I'm jacking your picks.
You're just going to pick it by format? What? No, that's cheater picking.
Now we're doing it.
No, it's your pick. Go ahead.
All right, we'll go with it. Thor's, one of our favorite miniseries from Secret Wars, is getting a trade paperback that month.
Yep.
It's basically all the different iterations from different worlds we've seen over the decades of Thor comics as cops on in Doom's world, and it's a cop genre by way of Asgardian toughness. And the first volume of the all-new Captain America, which is, say, Sam Wilson's Captain America.
Oh, man, I do love that.
Also Ben Spencer. It's so far so good on that one, you know.
The Grunwald
era
of Cap.
Yep. All right. So that's my picks. Just some graphic novels.
I feel if he did two, I'm going to do.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So I want to throw out. Just glad to see that DC is continuing to put these out. Robin Volume 2.
Yeah.
The Chuck Dixon.
Dixon's Robins from the
90s. Yeah, this volume should have a lot of great artists. I think Mike Waringo is involved
in this is the
one.
Start of the Robin series, ongoing series.
Yeah, this is
series.
Robin series proper, and it had some great artists on it. Just really, really good stuff. The other one is an Image hardcover that I have to mention. It's Nailbiter, the Deluxe Murder Edition.
Deluxe Murder Edition.
Which I can't wait. This series is sort of darkly fun about a town where, was it, 28 serial killers come from?
It's a lot of serial killers,
and
yes.
And focuses mainly specifically on one guy who, once he killed people, he bit the nails off of their bodies, and there's some stuff with that. But Joshua Williamson, who writes Birthright, this is his other book. Actually, his one out of, what,
yeah,
four
he writes
or five
several other
that he's
books,
writing.
But most important thing is, this is the writer of Birthright. And this is a book a lot of people don't know about, because I'll get people come in, I'll recommend Birthright, because we all love Birthright.
Yep.
And, like, I've read that, and I'm like, have you read Nailbiter? And nobody knows about it.
Yeah. And more people should take notice, because it is a really fun book.
Yep.
Especially if you, I mean, if you also like Chew, I think Nailbiter is sort of right in that ballpark.
It's not as weird as Chew.
It can get weird.
This is more, I think of it more in the vein of Hack Slash.
Okay, all right.
Or Revival.
Okay. But yes, that is definitely one that I am excited for.
All right. I'm going to random pick an issue, and then I guess we'll probably wrap up and go through a quick list of other stuff we've got. Yep. But Dave is the one who reads Astro City in single issues. I usually wait for hardcovers. Uh-huh. But this Astro City, the one that's starting in February, number 32, is a sequel featuring Steeljack, the ex-villain turned private eye. This was a really great story. It was like volume 5 of the series called The Tarnished Angel, where basically is this guy who sort of looks like Robert Mitchum. He's out of prison. He's trying to go the straight and narrow. And it was one of the big first epics of Astro City.
Yeah.
It was also the one where Kurt Busiek started to miss deadlines and stuff, so it took forever to finally come out.
Right.
But when it did, it was really good. And they are revisiting. This is part one of a 3-part sequel to The Tarnished Angel. So that's kind of cool.
It's kind of like a villainous Colossus, right? Yeah. His skin turned to like steel, but he kind of was trying to make good.
But this is interesting. He says, Steeljack's been getting on the last few years. He's hired by a femme fatale from his past. Wind up in deep trouble with no one to turn to. So it's straight up noir, which is one of my favorite genres. So I'm looking forward to it. That's probably a good place to stop. But Dave, you got a list of other stuff you're going to mention?
Yeah, I'll just quick mention a few things here. Dark Horse is putting out a hardcover that's the anniversary edition of the first Aliens comic that they ever did.
Yep, saw that.
It was a black and white thing that they did, but with like really elaborate gray tones on it. I remember both liking and sort of being somewhat like it didn't quite feel like the movies, but it's the only Aliens comic I've ever seen that dealt with Newt seriously. She was grown up.
Yep.
I believe she was like almost like dealing with PTSD and was like on so many drugs to control it that she was almost like a zombie, but they needed her for a mission that ultimately took them to, I think, the actual homeworld of the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, it was like the homeworld of the guys who were on the... Well, what do they call it? The Navigator? The other aliens that
the stuff from Prometheus that this is clearly no longer in continuity.
Yeah, no longer in continuity. But it was like very seriously written, almost more horror. And so that's... if you are an Aliens fan, you should probably owe it to yourself to check this out.
All right, what else is on your list?
I got the DC coloring book that has... They're doing one of Hush and one of Mad Love.
Yep.
And the only other thing really of note I've got on here is Spider-Man, number one, which is the Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Everybody already knows about Miles Morales, but, this is, a new launch, and this is obviously the place to get in.
Yep.
He's in the Marvel Universe now.
Yep. He's been showing up in a couple books this week. Nick?
I only have one other, actually I have two things.
Okay.
Art of, Rashaan Ekdahl hardcover.
Oh yeah, saw
which,
that.
He's a great artist. It's a fun art book. He's done both, I think, myself and Dave, some commissions from him.
Yep.
And the other one I have is the Avengers Standoff Welcome to Pleasant Hill.
Yeah, I saw that. There's a new crossover coming.
Which is a prequel to a big event coming up. It looks like it has sort of a Springfield from G.I. Joe kind of vibe. It's a small town where bad things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if what is going to be involved, but it sounds like a lot of fun. That is what I have.
All right, I've got a few things I'm going to mention. There's a new Tomb Raider series, which is mostly notable, and then it's the writer from That One Summer, that sort of slice of life girls book that we've sold a lot of.
Oh, yeah.
She's writing Tomb Raider, which I thought was interesting. There is the I Am a Hero Volume 1 Omnibus from Dark Horse, which is declared probably the greatest zombie manga ever. There is the Injustice Gods Among Us Year 1 Complete, which completes all of Year 1 in one trade.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is super cool.
Finally. Make it easier.
Amulet Volume 7 by a friend of the store, Kazu Kibishi, and former was our first guest for All Ages Awesomeness.
Yeah.
And then Disney Princess Comics number 1, which has art by Amy Meberson, who is also a guest at one of our All Ages Awesomeness.
Sure. Go, Amy.
And that is my list. That is our run-through previews for the month. Definitely not everything, but some of the highlights. You can always pick up previews and give it a look. And if you want to get orders in before, say, the third Saturday of the month, that's usually the best time to get them into us.
That'd be swell. That'd be great.
All right. We'll be back in just a second to talk comics for the week. All right. We are talking comics for Wednesday, December 2nd. And Dave, why don't you start us off?
All right.
Is this another... Oh, you know what?
We were going to cheater pick one thing altogether before we started.
Oh, right.
Because
it's a continuation of something we've been enjoying for about 3 weeks.
We've all been liking Vader Down, the crossover between Star Wars and Darth Vader. That started with Vader Down number one. Part three comes out this week. It is Star Wars number 13, and it's so much fun.
The focus on this one is who's Vader's partner? Who's the lady?
Dr. Afa.
Yep. And the two killer droids.
Triple Zero. And BT.
Yep. Running into fairly brutal confrontations and yet somewhat darkly comedic.
Oh, yeah.
More than a little darkly comedic confrontations with several of our heroes.
Yep.
Yeah. There's many confrontations that are just hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also the running gag of Han Solo where Afra's never heard of him.
Yeah. And, of course, he's heard of her.
There's some great stuff with Leia. There is
great Chewy moments. There's
Chewy gets a great.
Oh man, and so does R2-D2 get some fun stuff. It's just this was a blast.
You know, I don't think it's giving me too much. At one point, the killer droid that's sort of the same style as R2,
yeah,
they meet face to face and like they roll up to each other, and there's like four panels in a row of them squawking and bleeping at each other.
Yes,
and the killer droid, or doesn't he say something like, "I can't believe the language on that"?
Yes,
it actually fits with the kind of thing we've heard C-3PO say.
Yeah, R2, but it was like
these two guys were just cussing each other.
Yeah.
It's like they were like bouncing back and forth.
I love that R2's basically like a sailor at this point.
I like to imagine it was the droid equivalent of a Yo Mama Slam contest.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
But yeah.
Ped has really beautiful art by Mike Deodato, if we didn't say that.
Yeah. It's...
Also, just like Vader Down number one, one of the best final panels. Yep. Such a great final moment.
Yeah.
I mean, this has everything you want in a Star Wars book.
So good.
Yeah, if you're not reading any of the Star Wars books,
you're missing out. It's such great stuff.
Go buy them.
Dave, what is your actual pick for this week?
All right, my actual pick is the first issue of Daredevil, the relaunched version. I did not have a particular interest in this coming up. It was sort of interesting because it's Charles Soule, who I like.
But it's coming off one of our most beloved runs ever.
Right, and honestly, after like 5 years or whatever it's been of Mark Waid, I was kind of ready for a bit of a Daredevil break, but I'm not going to get it. It turns out the Daredevil is going to continue to be good.
Darn.
Charles Soule has teamed up with artist Ron Garney, who's a artist I remember as always being solid.
I'm trying to think of the last thing Garney did.
The last thing I remember was Captain America with Mark Waid, which was not the last thing he did. But no, it was the last thing I remember him being really good at.
He did like a Wolverine book somewhat recently.
Yeah, that's right. Somewhere. With Jason Aaron.
Yeah. And that was good work too. Yeah. But he has never been on my list.
Yeah, me neither.
And this is absolutely the best artwork I've ever seen.
Beautiful. And the coloring is really interesting.
Yeah,
the
color palette.
This has a very stylish color palette that's almost a sort of a rust palette.
Yeah. A lot of reds and
it's sort of
blacks and...
Yeah, it gives it a sort of noir look, you know, sort of like a sepia tone look.
Yeah.
But it's like a lot of the Marvel relaunches or the new number ones that are going on right now. It throws you right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
You do not see, it is not like, here is what happens the day after Mark Waid's run ended.
Right, yeah.
It is months later.
Yep.
He is back in Hell's Kitchen,
yep.
I think.
Yep.
He is now a prosecuting attorney as opposed to a defense attorney.
And page one is Daredevil jumping off the bridge.
Page one is Daredevil jumping off a bridge, yep. And... it is a, you know, actually the way that's filmed, that's very much Batman Year One. That's kind of odd. It's filmed in that, which was drawn by David Mazzucchelli, who also drew Daredevil, which is, I don't know if that's some sort of homage to him.
Yeah, maybe.
But anyway, there's a cool action sequence, honestly, with Daredevil in water, which is
that's
difficult for him. And they come up with this neat thing because sound travels differently in water. And so he has a tough time down there. It actually comes faster. This is how they narrate it.
It seems like Soule, like Waid, is thinking exactly the way you
and
would
so Daredevil
want to.
Has to like kind of like he's like inundated with stuff faster than he normally would be underwater, and he has to try and process it. And there's the story begins with sort of this. There's a guy who's sort of a informant who a bunch of some sort of new group.
Ten Fingers?
Yeah, it's like a mob organization?
But there's almost like a supernatural element to it. They're like, they're scary.
Yeah, they seem like they're scaring everybody, and he's running up against them, and
you see a really well choreographed confrontation with a help from his new friend.
Yep.
Blind Spot, who was sort of the mysterious character on the cover that people were like, is that Gambit?
It's not Gambit.
It's not Gambit.
We don't know who he is.
We don't know who he is. Things are still a little bit mysterious in this one. There is still some unveiling going on. Although this doesn't seem quite so mystery-oriented as, say, Thor.
Yeah.
When it was the new female Thor, and we're like, we're never going to find out who she is for like 12 issues or whatever. Yeah. This one just seems to be easing you in a little bit. But you see, also glimpsed in here are Foggy.
New job status quo.
Yeah. There's stuff about his new job in there. And there's some big reveals about the people behind his new threat.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just a rock solid issue.
Yep.
I'm curious to see. Sewell is the guy who wrote She-Hulk, right?
Yep.
And
he's an attorney.
Was himself an attorney or is an attorney.
He wrote Daredevil or Matt in that She-Hulk run too. So
yeah.
He did a good job with it.
And so I don't know yet how big a part that's going to play in it. And it's sort of percolating in the background in this, but there's no big legal scenes or anything.
Right.
It is more of a kind of noir action adventure, you know, pulp adventure here.
Yeah.
Kind of, at least at the moment, it feels a little more pulp adventure than superhero adventure, which is a good tone for Daredevil.
Yeah.
It's one that for sure works for him.
Yeah.
And Daredevil's got a new costume that looks cool.
Yeah.
The visuals are cool. I don't know. It's a good. Everybody who likes has been liking Daredevil should take it for a test.
Yeah. Everybody who liked the Daredevil TV show will probably like this.
Yep. Right. It has something of that edge to it.
Yeah. It was really good.
All right.
Nick?
Okay. I'm going to pick another Marvel book. Shocker.
A lot of Marvel books being picked this week.
Yeah, you know, that just happens. But this is All New X-Men number one. And I wasn't actually expecting much from this book. It's written by Dennis Hopeless, who is he the one who wrote the kids on the island killing each other?
Remember.
I think that's Avengers Arena. Avengers Arena,
I believe.
I think that was his doing. No, but this is him writing the sort of past X-Men brought into the future.
Right, the sort of the teenage X-Men.
Yeah, the teenage X-Men. And it's sort of just a character issue. A lot of them have sort of split up and gone their own ways. They're sort of on holiday in a lot of ways. I mean, but X-23 is in a relationship with Angel, so you get to see sort of that aspect.
People who read All New, who've been reading All New Wolverine will have glimpsed him in those pages, and you can find out more about it in this book.
Yep. But there's also sort of a young Hank sort of on a road trip with, weirdly, the sort of young Apocalypse from Uncanny X-Force.
Yeah, that's why that was interesting. They blended the X-Men, the young X-Men, with some of the new young characters they've created in Uncanny X-Force and other things. Yeah.
Dennis Hopeless has a knack for writing sort of these teen characters, and it really gives them a good sense of character, and I really dig what he's doing. I especially like that he has Iceman based in Austin, which I think is really cool. But it also focuses on sort of the legacy of Scott Summers and sort of
who's been very mysterious since this the relaunch?
There's
that something bad happened, and you find out a bit about it.
Yeah, you do find out a bit about it in this one, and you sort of get some followers who sort of idolized Scott Summers.
As the kind of Magneto was right.
Yeah, basically the Magneto was right type, and you have a young Scott Summers who actually is having a hard time sort of facing what you know his future self has done.
Right,
which is an interesting dynamic, and sort of what he does to sort of atone for that.
I can't remember, is the present-day Cyclops, is he, like, known to be dead?
I don't want to spoil.
Okay. I couldn't remember if that was, like, if prior to this, if they had said that.
They may have mentioned
that he had done something big, and yet somehow had seemingly been killed already in Secret Wars.
Yeah,
so
they've mentioned
that.
They've mentioned a few places, but definitely a spoiler on that
one.
I'm not going to mention.
We shouldn't
but
talk about
there's
that
some
part.
Just good moments. I love when characters get their moments, and that is what Dennis Hopeless does. And it's got art by Mark Bagley. So, I mean, I'm a sucker for his art. But, yeah, I really, really dug it. I thought it was great.
What was Mark Bagley doing prior to this?
He was doing a little bit of All New X-Men with when Bendis was writing it.
Most people probably know him best as the first artist of
Ultimate
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He's been around. I mean, originally, I think I first saw him on, Thunderbolts with Busiek?
Yeah.
That was his first claim to fame.
Yeah, I feel like he did some Hulk or something. I don't remember what he was doing.
He did
doing
do
last.
Some Hulk. Yeah. Indestructible Hulk.
Randy, yep. What have
all right.
you?
So my pick is Spidey number one. This is
all Marvel.
This is yeah, it's all Marvel. Well, Dave has one non-Marvel.
I have one non-Marvel.
So this is written by Robbie Thompson, who you might know from either Supernatural or his book Silk that he does. Art is by Nick Bradshaw, who's got sort of an Art Adams-y vibe. And this is notably a flashback to Spidey's early days, when he's just starting out as Spider-Man, young Peter Parker, and it is, but is also informed through where we know he's going to go now. So
right.
this one, and it's also because Marvel's in sort of a sliding timescale, Pete is not a teenager in the 60s. He's a teenager in like 2001.
Right. But he's a teenager.
Is yeah. But yeah, he's a teenager, but they've got, you know, the texting and Twitter and all that kind of stuff is around.
But they've got the traditional elements like the bully, Flash Thompson.
Yep. Flash Thompson, the bully. He gets Gwen Stacy is assigned as his tutor and he's a crush on her. The interesting thing I thought about this is they are introducing, like, Sajani, the sort of his nemesis slash love interest in the Dan Slott run, uh-huh. is introduced here as the valedictorian who is sort of his nerd brain competitor even in high school.
Right. So they might be doing, like, a little slight bit of historical yep. rewriting.
Yep. I like that.
Continuity tweaks.
But he fights Doc Ock. There's a lot of great banter between them. There is a... some nice little nods. They do a nod to the famous Spider-Man issue where he holds up the thing that's crushing him.
Oh, yeah. There's also a smaller villain who shows up in what would be the equivalent of the opening of a James Bond sequence.
Yep.
A kind of a lighter, lighter tone to that conversation.
I think the entire issue sort of feels like quintessential Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's fun. It's got some neat little nods to future continuity, but it's also just sort of a easily standalone read. If you're looking for classic Spider-Man stuff, it reminds me of when Busick in the 90s did a book called Untold Tales of Spider-Man, which went back and sort of backfilled in a little bit of what happened between all the issues of Spider-Man we'd seen. And this is just really fun classic Spider-Man stuff. Funny, great art, and notably all ages. So, like, if kids are looking for Spider-Man books, I can finally hand them something they don't have to go, I don't want to read Spider-Man as a business magnate. Because right. this little kid would know the word magnate.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Well, there's always been that kind of weird thing over the last decade or two where, you know, as the comics audience has aged a little bit,
yeah.
They'll do, like, sort of experimental issues. It's like, here's a Daredevil issue where he spends the entire issue talking to his therapist.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my god, that was so amazingly written. It's amazing. And some kid will come in and be like, where's a Daredevil comic I can read? And that ain't what he wants.
You're like, that's not what he wants.
He wants Daredevil fighting ninjas on rooftops.
Yep. This is Spider-Man fighting Doc Ock and having adventures in high school.
Yep.
And it's not like Marvel's been doing a pretty good job of this with something like Miss Marvel mm-hmm. and Squirrel Girl and that kind of thing. They're reaching out at least the teenage girls.
Yeah.
And it's funny, they have left the audience that was their bread and butter, the teenage boys, mostly behind.
Well, you know, you say that, but I have had many a teenage boy picking up Spider-Gwen
yeah.
and Spider-Woman and stuff like yeah. that. I think to some degree, the old cliches about, you know, girls will read girl comics, boys will read boy comics, are somewhat just being stripped away.
Wait, yeah. Dave, are you saying boys will read about girls?
They're not icky all the time, is what I've learned.
Wait, so you're saying we should maybe make some female action figures or that women could actually be leads in movies, that kind of thing?
Let's not get carried away.
Radical talk, sir. Radical talk.
Outrageous. Well, what happens is every time that they, like, really support these kind of things
yeah.
is not only do all the old cliches fall by the wayside, but they make money.
Yeah.
And I like to think at least on a commercial side, that's what will propel it forward.
You like to think someone up there is like, hey, we were wrong. Maybe we're wrong about this other stuff we're not doing.
Yeah. Let's sell to everybody instead of just the niche market.
Yeah.
Instead of just half the world, let's sell to all the world.
my cheater pick this week is All New, All Different Avengers number 2. This was my pick a couple weeks ago when it came out. This continues the story of the Avengers reforming with a very new makeup of, you know, Iron Man, Cap, and Thor are all in there, but Thor's a woman and Cap is black now. And features Spider-Man, Miss Marvel, and Nova, the sort of young contingent of heroes.
Right.
And this is such a classic. Mark Waid's writing it, so it's got this classic feel to it of the Avengers assembling to fight a threat that they couldn't fight on their own. But this does more of this has Miss Marvel and Nova in Jersey City fighting a big bad guy. And I love the sort of rivalry between the two of them where they just can't stand each other.
That's right.
And it's a
but
ton
they should be best friends.
And I mean, it's
I know, but like, a little early antagonism.
Yeah. It is
totally fun. Miles Morales is in there doing sort of. At one point, he's like, I was swinging by the tower. I saw a bunch of energy busting out. And I went to investigate, and he's like, that's okay, right? And I love that these kids are trying to sort of make it. And there's maybe a nod that an old Avengers foe is involved in all this, which is great. When Thor shows up, it's a great moment. The art is really, really nice. It's by Kubert this time, all of it by Adam Kubert. And there's also a great little moment where the Avengers are going into battle and Miles Morales is surfing on Iron Man's back. Just tons of fun. This is fun superhero team. I've not liked an Avengers book in a long, long time. This is what I wanted out of the Avengers. I didn't even know it.
Looks like they may be able to survive Bendis.
Yes, yes.
It just may take they have to go into a chrysalis and emerge as something new.
Yep. Well, even when I was excited about this book, I was excited as a team. It's like, oh, this looks like a fun team, but it doesn't look like the Avengers to me.
Right.
But it's feeling like the Avengers.
Right.
So that's super cool. Nick, what is your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is the Totally Awesome Hulk number one.
It is actually called the Totally Awesome Hulk.
Is it Totally Awesome?
Yeah. I actually feel like it earns its name, Totally Awesome.
Yeah, bro.
Yes, from the 90s. This is written by Greg Pak, who if you have read anything like World War Hulk or Planet Hulk.
He's also been doing. Has had a notable run on Action Comics for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. And his run on Incredible Hercules. I think you know that Greg Pak is one of those writers that knows how to write Hulk.
Yep.
And this is him writing. I don't think it's a spoiler.
It's not a spoiler.
Amadeus Cho has become the new Hulk.
Right.
And you know the creator of the character writing him in a new sort of way. Frank Cho, who. Shaun of the She-Devil, responsible for drawing
that. It is one of those weird things to have two Cho's suddenly.
There's
the fictional character lead of Amadeus Cho, and there's the actual person, Frank Cho, is the artist. He's mostly known as a cheesecake artist.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
But he's very talented. Like, I was flipping through this, and although there is a little bit of his trademark cheesecake.
There's definitely some cheesecake.
Yep. But I feel like his overall kind of comic art skills have improved a bit. I feel like his character designs are better.
His storytelling's solid.
They used to always... I would too often find that his characters ended up looking like Liberty Meadows people. His comedic comics.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And here, I feel like I only saw one or two cases where I'm like, that's very Liberty Meadows. Mostly people seem a little bit more defined, I'd say.
Yeah, and it's sort of... Amadeus Cho has a sort of modus operandi, a thing that they are going after, sort of fighting giant monsters, so that works with Frank Cho's background of drawing dinosaurs and other things.
Yeah.
And some fun guest stars, there's some great humor. Craig Pak does some great character bits with Amadeus Cho and other members of the Marvel Universe, which I think is great. So I feel like this is going to be a really fun book to pay attention to. And I think people who are kind of clamoring that, oh, Hulk not Bruce Banner, is like, well, give this a shot. I think you'll have a lot of fun with it.
Do people generally know who Amadeus Cho is?
No.
He's like a super smart kid.
He is the eighth smartest person in the Marvel Universe.
Yes, yeah, they always that's do correct.
That. He is, 19 now? 19 years old as a character?
Yeah.
So the series is probably going to explore, well, it's like, that's probably like the ultimate fantasy when you're like a gawky teenager is the Hulk.
Well, I think there's more to sort of than that. With Pop,
no, but I mean there's fertile territory to be mined there though.
And it's definitely mined in this first issue. There's some darkness thrown in it as well. So I'm very curious. It should be fun to see.
When Cho was just running as a solo operative, it seems like they used to kind of show in the comic almost the way they did in that Sherlock Holmes movie by who's the director?
Guy Ritchie.
He would kind of his mind would freeze frame on the world, and he would pinpoint weak spots and all that kind of stuff, and put together clues. Does he do that in any of that in this?
Not really.
Really in this.
Okay. I was just wondering if he's like using his intellect too.
It seems like they've introduced another character who sort of knows him from a long way back, which makes sense. And She sort of notes that he is not, that he is basically enjoying being the Hulk a little too much. That he maybe is not. He keeps claiming he's like, hey, I'm the smartest guy, but it's like
he's letting it slide.
Maybe the Hulk is having more of an influence than he thought.
Interesting. So that's some fertile territory to mine, too.
Dave, what is your cheater pick?
And my cheater pick is the second issue of the new James Bond series from Warren Ellis, titled Varger.
Yep.
I don't know what that's, some Russian word or something.
Maybe.
I don't know if it's, we know its relevance yet. It's not the name of the drug, is it?
I have no idea.
Anyway, James Bond is investigating a, so it's like a designer drug, right?
Yeah.
That's been causing some problems. Not a whole lot to say about this. Bond is Bond, but it's, what's fun about this is, honestly, Warren Ellis's slightly acidic filter is a pretty good fit for Bond.
Yeah.
There's a somewhat brutal opening combat scene, as there was in the other one, that begins looking like it's going to be a romantic scene.
Yes.
And they kind of subvert that a bit in a fairly brutal way.
Yep.
Then you get to... This is sort of the infiltration issue. This is the one where you kind of see him full on undercover in the bad guys organization. You get to start to see who they're up against. There's also some more behind the scenes stuff with some of his some other operatives in there.
Yeah, it's the field office in Berlin. That was my favorite stuff, where you see sort of Bond working with the other handlers and that kind of stuff, and how much of a legend he is amongst the ground crew.
There's also some funny banter too, or just kind of fun banter when he walks in. He says he's like I hesitate to ask for like the coffee at a field office.
Yeah,
and they're like, dude, we're in Berlin. They take their coffee seriously.
Yep.
Have some coffee.
You know, it's funny. You know, the reason that resonates, I'm 100% sure it's the kind of thing that happened to Warren Ellis at a signing, because almost all of Warren Ellis' strongest moments seem to be things that like, oh, that probably happened to Warren Ellis.
A little bit autobiographical. Yeah.
I had to look it up because I wanted to know, but Varger is Old Norse for wolf.
That makes sense.
Or evildoer or destroyer.
Play a role in there. Anyway, that's about all there is to say about it. It was another good issue in there. I'm finding the art just a little dodgy at times in the action scenes, but overall, very much digging this new Bond comic. I feel like it's the first good Bond comic I've read in a long, long time.
Yeah. All right. Also on my list this week, and it's another big week, Doctor Strange number 3 continues the Jason Aaron and Chris Piccolo. Introduces the sort of overarching bad guy, features full frontal nudity of Doctor Strange, so I'll throw that in there. Paper Girls number 3, that's the Brian Vaughn Cliff Chang 80s period piece. Paper Girls, aliens, dimensional. Well, I don't know what's going
Stephen
on in this
King.
I don't know what's going on in this book, but I'm more and more intrigued with every issue. There's keep coming with twists, and I'm loving what's going on. I don't know what's going on yet, but I like where we're going. Plutona number 3, the story of some kids who find a dead superhero in the woods and what they do about it. Again, very Stephen King-y as well, been enjoying that book. Harrow County, which we reviewed the first issue of way back when. This is the first trade paperback of this sort of spooky witches and monsters book by The Six Guns' Cullen Bunn and beautiful artwork by Tyler Crook. The Krogan Adventures gets a second color volume. This is the graphic novel series of sort of historical fiction that Chris Schweitzer does. We've had him at the store a few times. His cartooning's amazing. In color, it looks really great.
This is the one about the French Foreign Legion.
French Foreign Legion.
Yeah, if you want to see an overseas adventure, this is your book.
Rat Queen's hardcover, collecting the first 10 issues. Super excited about this. It's one of my favorite books. And as we referred to a little earlier, the Private Eye hardcover, which is by Brian Vaughn and Marcos Martin. It is a it was originally a digital comic. It is sideways. It is like a longwise book.
Yeah.
It's widescreen.
It was 10 issues.
300, it's styled like that.
Basically, I'm just going to read. It says, years after the digital cloud bursts and exposes all our most confidential hopes and fears, the Private Eye is set in the inevitable future where everyone will have a secret identity. Following an unlicensed PI as he's thrust in the most important case of his life, this sci-fi mystery explores the nature of privacy with frightening prescience. It's great. I've read it. I'm glad to have it collected in a hardcover. We don't know how much of it's going to be. We don't know if it's going to stay in print or not.
It seems right now quite possible that this could be a one-time only.
Yep, but definitely worth a look, and easily could have been my pick this week if the comics weren't so good.
Art that will make you cry tears of joy.
Yes.
It's true.
Nick?
I've got All New Inhumans, number 1. New Charles Soule, James Asmus, Stefano Caselli book. focusing on a team run by Crystal, which is was really, really good. 22nd issue of East of West. I mentioned this because this is a full silent issue about assassins coming to kill one of the major players of the book, and it is all kinds of awesome.
But it's an issue too late.
I know, we all know you're going to go by the G.I. Joe numbering.
Issue 21 is when you do silent issues.
I know, but because it was so dang good, I'll give it a
Six Gun did a silent issue at issue 21 as well.
I know, because they love G.I. Joe.
Yeah. As do all right-thinking people.
It's true. Red Wolf number one sort of picks up where 1872 from Secret Wars left off.
Yeah.
The Native American hero.
Yeah, I really, really dug this issue. It was good. And I'm, again, curious to see where it goes. Extraordinary X-Men number three comes out, which, I don't know, Dave. I know you're reading this one as well. It's got its claws in me.
It's slightly hit and miss for me, It's the first X books in a long time I've been enjoying. I think it's only that it's composed of such disparate team members.
Yeah.
That I do like a certain stability to my X Men, and this one is a little bit more wild.
I think the one thing I really liked here, and it concerns the two characters on the cover. Yeah. I thought Lemire did a great job dealing with those characters and the age gap and sort of how
Jean Grey and Old Man Logan
sort of their time together and how they sort of converse. It was fun. Robin War begins with the big first issue, which is all of the Robins versus the Court of Owls.
It's kind of a fun premise.
It's a great premise. So if you've been enjoying, Grayson, Red Hood and the Outlaws,
We Are Robin,
definitely one to sort of maybe check out. Harley's Little Black Book, which...
It's a team-up book.
Team-up book featuring Wonder Woman. Yep. So
every issue is going to have different people. The first issue is Wonder Woman.
If you can imagine Wonder Woman, Harley Quinn,
it's a regular creative team of Harley Quinn. If you've been liking Harley Quinn, there's more of that.
Harley Quinn.
Yep.
Sheriff of Babylon, which is the new Vertigo series by Tom King and Mitch Gerads.
Set in Iraq.
Yep.
During wartime. It's interesting.
I thought Mitch Garrett's on art is...
Yeah, the art is gorgeous.
Yes.
This is definitely sort of a...
Punisher.
This is in the vein of something like The Hurt Locker and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh. Well, I think Tom King is using some of his real-world experiences.
Yes. Yep.
And on this, the new issue of Nova, which sees father and son continue to team up. The fourth issue of Invincible Iron Man, which the cover has Mary Jane Watson making an appearance.
She's in her famous "You Just Hit the Jackpot."
Yep, but this one is just like him, her holding an Iron Man mask and saying "No, Spidey." And then, as for hardcovers, the Chew Omnivore Edition Volume 5, which is the only way I read Chew, is hitting, and I can't wait to dive into that one.
Yep,
it's the only way debonair people read.
That's true.
Chew.
It's the only way.
Dave, what else you got on your list? Anything?
That's it. Nope, y'all covered it.
All right. All right, that is it for comics for this week. We will be back next week. And until next time,
Yo Joe!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.